Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, we are touching a bit on some Pro League news and events. And then today, Tuesday, there is a new top 20 poll out, but we will do the NLL trade deadline. We'll do PLL free agency, which is, I guess, kind of winding down. And then the college media poll is out from Inside Lacrosse. So we will look at who's who in the top 20, how teams moved, how I voted, and all that good stuff. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a like, leave a subscribe, download, all that good stuff. Podcast is actually gaining a little bit of traction. Might have some news on that in the future. But thank you again, at least for today, for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. Thank you for being here with me today. It is Tuesday, March 12th, top 20 day. So we've got a college poll to look at for the week. Got a little bit of a weekend recap of the college games there. But before we get into that, let's do some pro stuff. Because today, as you listen to this on Tuesday, is the NLL's trade deadline day. We are a little bit beyond, if you're not much of a box fan, halfway through the season. Basically, everyone has played at this point, you know, in the ballpark of 10 to 12 games has, you know, probably 5 to 8 games remaining. The trade deadlines in pro sports can be a ton of fun because it lets you know where things are beyond just like the rumors and all that kind of stuff on social that everybody loves. But you get to see who's going to try and go out and get what they think they need for a championship run. Who considers themselves to maybe say, we're out of the race and we should be trying to secure assets for the future. Fans can get excited or sad about both of those scenarios. You know, a team that's mortgaging its future now and makes a run now, if that run fails, that can kind of set the team back for a couple of years. A team that stands pat, maybe they make a magical run. Whatever you do, if you end up winning a championship, it was the right thing to do, and it all becomes worth it in that moment if you win. Everything you did was right because it got you a championship. A team that sells short-term players to acquire long-term assets right then, to say no championship this year, but they can accelerate their rebuild. They can accelerate their roster building at a time like this with the right deal. If nothing else, it's an opportunity for everybody in the league to do something that affects the last half of the regular season and the postseason. I am by no means an NLL expert. And in pro lacrosse, indoor and outdoor, there are plenty of factors outside of just player contracts, salaries, things like that, that you only really think about in other pro sports that matter. Player location matters because guys don't always live where they play their home games. And they might not be super anxious to do a ton of traveling all the time. Guys have jobs that need to be accessible outside of lacrosse. They need to be in a place where they can get to their real job. There are relationships that are just going to be valuable, that a trade is not going to be worth breaking up. So it makes things more complicated. I think when you're talking trade deadlines in pro lacrosse, again, all that goes for indoor and outdoor. I think it's fine to just kind of throw in that as like the disclaimer at the top and then say, all right, let's just talk about it like any other pro sport now. So let's do that. When you think about the teams that might be going for it, you have to look kind of at the top of the standings, maybe right below them. For me, I look at that group at the top three. I see Toronto, I see Albany, I see San Diego. For Toronto, it's tough to look at what that team has done this year and the way they're constructed and say you can find a really serious need for them, something where it's like, well, if they have this, they're definitely winning it. Like they already have all those things. They've been cooking with gas all year. They're already, I think, a pretty sizable favorite. So it's tough to look not only at their roster, but look around and be like, they could reasonably acquire that player and that would make sense for them to do to get them to the next level. Like, they are at the top level. Going from, like, favorite to very, very heavy favorite maybe doesn't do a ton. You know, the Rock are good everywhere. So if they wanted to make a strength stronger and pursue depth on defense and in transition, because they've had injuries, you know, they've been dealing with them all year, but it hasn't, again, nothing seems to slow this team down, then maybe you think about doing that. If it's me, though, I feel good about that roster. I feel good about that locker room. I don't need to give up anything down the road to make me a millimeter better this year. I look at Albany, I think of a team that's already kind of at house money status. They were not supposed to have anything close to the kind of season they are having. And we always kind of wondered, people have just kind of wondered, when is this team going to come back down to earth? And they are sustaining flight just fine. Firewolves are cooking. The roster is already super young and super talented. They are built for the future and built to win immediately already. I think if you want to say, all right, maybe they could use a little help on the defensive end, some veteran guys, something like that, then maybe you could convince me, but I don't know what they're going to be willing to part with to get that kind of thing. And they already have some solid leadership back there with you know, the goaltending situation. So I feel like Albany's in a good spot too. San Diego as well. It feels like this group has everything it needs. I know we kind of said that about San Diego the last couple of years, and they keep coming up short. Colorado kept getting in their way, but we'll get to Colorado in a second. It doesn't look like Colorado's going to be in their way this year. So, I think San Diego is a team, again, where it's like, this group can get it done. This might be, you know, the last year, maybe two, where you think this group's going to get it done before you have to make some changes. But I don't know what you would do for them either. You know, in the past, maybe you would look at goalie, but Origliere has been so good. So I feel like San Diego, all three of these teams at the top, have no real reason to get super aggressive, but again, we'll see. I think the real question with this deadline is, what's going to happen with the logjam that's currently existing in the middle of the standings? There's five teams right now: Buffalo, Panther City, New York, Rochester, and Calgary. All five of those teams have either 6 wins or 5 wins. And they are all, you know, kind of in that playoff mix today. So, you know, if the season ended today, they're in. But over the next month and a half, as this all shakes out, they're not all going to make it. At least one of those teams is missing the postseason. I feel like it's just going to happen. I don't know. Among those teams, I think you have to wonder who is saying we are one or two guys away from a run and then making a move. If you do it, if you make a move at the deadline, you have to think it's because you think it can get you to, you know, at least to the finals. It's got to give you a shot. I feel like you don't give up assets and get nuts unless you're really thinking you can make it all the way there, if you really like what you have everywhere else. And I don't know which of those five teams would do it. I look at Buffalo, they just won the title. They're the defending champ. I feel like the move that they needed to make, they just made it in adding Connor Farrell to win them some face-offs. And I feel like they're going to trust the group that just won them a title to right the ship, get back to the top, and try and make it there again this year. But the rest of this group, I don't see where the moves get made, where they have the pieces that are going to be attractive for somebody who's higher up or somebody who's, you know, they're willing to part with, who's a young star. I just don't see the move that gets made for these clubs right now. So it's tough to see kind of in that group who would be a buyer. But I think, again, when you look at deadlines, there's also the question, who's going to be the seller? I think that top three clearly do not look like sellers. Obviously, they wouldn't be. They're the top three in the league. I think that logjam of five teams might all do like the, hey, look, we got enough to get us here, to get us into the playoffs. Let's find some magic. Let's see what we can do. You know, if you're the Riptide, if you're in New York, you're saying we're going to go out with a bang and Jeff Teat's going to take us where we're going to go. Let's see how it goes. Buffalo is saying, hey, look, we got our guys. Let's go. You know, Rochester is saying we can outscore anybody. Let's just go with what we got. Let's go. So it's a group of five teams there that I think all can do that. We have what we need. Let's not get crazy. Let's not mortgage our future. Let's not, you know, go so all in that if we don't win, it's going to wreck us. So, yeah, I kind of look at that, even that first eight teams all saying, let's just roll it out. We're in the playoff picture. Let's do it. I think the sellers are the teams you're going to typically find near the bottom of the standings. Right now, that's Vancouver. Vancouver's 3-9. I don't consider Vancouver to be a seller, though. The Warriors are already a team that's in the process of building for the future. You know, you've got new head coach and GM and Malowski who's building something with young stars. And I think the most desirable players on their roster to trade for are those young stars, guys like Owen Grant, guys like Adam Charlambides, i.e. the guys they definitely shouldn't be parting with and won't be eager to part with. So, I mean, you know, you look at the guys that are there for Vancouver where somebody would say, oh yeah, we want that guy. Vancouver will say no. You know, as they're in the rebuild and everything, they've got their core. They're not going to trade their core. And that's kind of where maybe the desirable pieces end. I don't know. But I think the one team to watch as a seller is Colorado. The Mammoth just haven't been able to find footing this year and just be consistent. Right now they're sitting at 4-9. And with five games left on their schedule, basically they need to win out to have any kind of playoff shot. Even winning out might not get it done for them. Probably doesn't. They'll probably need some help. They may have some veteran guys who are looking to pursue a ring this year, want to find maybe another place to do it, you know, or they're thinking it's time to make some moves and get this franchise, you know, look at what we wanted to do better this year that we didn't do well, see how we can help ourselves at the deadline, position ourselves better for next year. You know, the Mammoth is a team that have been in the finals the last 2 years, but now, again, here they are at 4-9. They're in a spot where you have to think about what the future looks like. Is this a fluke? Are we going to be back there in the finals mix next year? Are we going to try and give this one more go? Or is it going to be maybe we just start looking at the next phase, the next iteration of the Mammoth? The deadline itself, I believe, is at 2 p.m. Eastern. I'll be looking for deals to be made. We'll see if it's a quiet deadline. Again, when you have kind of that clear top three and then that group of teams in the middle who are all kind of in the mix as they're built, then usually that kind of points to, all right, maybe it'll be a quiet deadline, but who knows? Who knows? It's as big as a day as we're going to have for the NLL here as the March to May gets going into the second half of the NLL season. Outdoors, PLL free agency is continuing. At this point, the market is starting to get kind of dry. Moves since our last pod are Jack Kincannon has retired, which basically puts an end to the goalie market in free agency. Kincannon didn't have a super long career, but I mean, man, is he a fun goalie to watch. And, you know, there was nobody cranking out highlights like Jack Kincannon, because when it came to 5 yards and in, those doorstep saves, I don't know if there's ever been a more exciting goalie. The robberies were just regular occurrences for him. And he had, and there are stats to back it up, that nobody was doing it like he was. So he's always going to be in those goalie highlight reels, making those unbelievable saves. I obviously wish him the best for whatever's next, but Jack Kincannon has decided to hang it up. Other moves, Johnny Surdick and Kyle Jackson officially re-upped with the Chaos. From what I hear, it sounds like the Chaos are probably going to have basically everybody back, and then they're going to use their new additions of Perkovic, Jules, and Rogers to push things maybe in a new direction on the offense a little bit. But, you know, the Chaos, their identity on the defensive end of the field, you know, the deal with Blaze getting his 3-year extension became official. They're clear on who their core is and what they're trying to do. Colt Williams, who's on IR, actually got a deal though through 2024 with the Archers. So that's a sign to me that maybe he can return this summer, can play for them. It's a solid move to keep him in the fold for them off that injury at the championship series. So you hope he can get on the field for them. You know, again, when they added him for the event, or when they traded for him, it was before the event. And Coach Bates had talked about it wasn't just something where they wanted him for the Sixes thing, that they saw value there, that they maybe think he can help them in the summer as well. So this would certainly be evidence that they are a believer in Cole Williams, because even after that injury, he got a deal. So the Redwoods add Alex Simmons and Ron John. Their indoor skill player group gets even bigger. Simmons is almost certainly the NLL Rookie of the Year. John is a vet, two-way midfield threat for them, like a great, you know, transition kind of player. This group, as it gets built, I feel like you can really feel Chris Collins and John Grant Jr. having an impact on the roster and the type of guys that they want. I think the culture and style reset of this team is very much becoming clear. I think it's a very different group, very different locker room for them. Water Dogs gave Jack Hanna a deal through 2026, basically the same three-year deal that a lot of the young stars are getting this offseason. Hanna's star has risen very quickly indoors as well. He's just really just becoming an excellent all-around pro lacrosse player. There's no other way to say it. Like, he's become a serious, you know, starting first-line midfield threat outdoors. He's a go-to player for the Water Dogs, or for the Water Dogs, for the Desert Dogs indoors. The Dogs. Hannah's just a dog guy, I guess. Desert, water, whatever it is. If it's a dog, Hannah's in on it. Otherwise, you know, there's not a ton out there left in the PLL free agent market right now to me. You know, again, it sounds like the chaos. Basically, you're going to get their guys back. Garnsey's deal seems to be taking forever, but, you know, it's always felt like the Woods are nobody for him. It's kind of the way he's talked about it before. So there's that. And I'm sure we'll just have, you know, over the next couple of weeks, some more announcements kind of trickle in, deals and all that. And then the draft is going to be here before you know it. The draft is when free agency ends. So kind of a quiet stretch here for PLL as the market, you know, fills out a little bit. But draft is coming. And speaking of the draft, let's talk college. College lacrosse. The top 20 for the week is here. It got all shook up. So my ballot and the way the final poll came out have a couple of big differences this week, actually. The top spot is not one of them. 22 voters put Army at one. I am among them. I voted Army number one. That is where Army is in the poll. They have yet to lose. They have a signature win in the Dome against Syracuse. They have the Rutgers win, which is, it's like their second best win. It's not as good as maybe it was when they got it. The UMass win, kind of the same story, was close, and now it's maybe kind of an ugly win. But look, they're undefeated, and as I watch them play, I think they're good everywhere. I really think they're a really good team. So nobody seems to want to be number one. The last 3 weeks, the number one team has lost. So I guess tune in for Army-Lehigh to see if it stays the case this weekend, because that's the game on the schedule. I think Army is on the road for that, too, I think. At number two, I have UVA. Two through four, as you can imagine, is just that ACC trio in whatever order you please. I have UVA two. I considered Notre Dame for two. I was basically between them. Either UVA or Notre Dame was going at number two for me. They all have one loss. I think UVA has the best loss of this trio. They lost to Hopkins. Notre Dame has better wins right now, I think, than UVA does. The Hoos beat Towson this week. The Tigers hung tough. If I had another number one vote to give, I'd probably give it to UVA or Notre Dame. I just need ACC play to get here, so this all just kind of gets sorted out. So I have UVA at two. UVA came in at three in the final poll. Notre Dame, who I have at three, came in at two. I will not at all argue with you if you say that's the order they should be in. Notre Dame beat Ohio State this week, 13-10. A pretty solid showing from them. Chris Kavanaugh went off in this game. He had 8 points. That's a career high. The Irish got four number one votes this week. So the number one votes this week were 22 to Army, four to Notre Dame, and then Duke got one as well. Notre Dame getting first place votes, though, makes sense to me, I think. At number four, I have Duke. Duke came in at four in the poll, so super interesting to have the poll have Duke at four. I had Duke at four, and they got a first-place vote. We already kind of talked about that. Look, in March, Duke is my title pick. They'll be there in the end. They have some destiny about them. They've got a midweek date here with Providence and with Richmond. But Duke getting the number one vote, you know, I had an interesting conversation with another kind of voter about it, because I think, again, this speaks to just the way the polls work and the way voters think about their poll differently. Like, you know, you can, the case to be made is that it's silly to put Army at one because, look, we all really know that UVA, Notre Dame, and Duke are all probably better teams than Army, right? Like, we all know that. Like, we look at them, we say, we know that these three ACC teams are better than Army. So why are you putting Army at one? Why wouldn't you just put Duke or Notre Dame or UVA at one? And I think just if you do that, if you think about your poll that way, like, I just know these teams are the best, so I'm just going to put them at number one, then you get to a place where the results don't really matter. because I just know this team is good. Or I just know this is the best team. They're my title pick. And since they're my title pick, they're just going to be number one all year. And then again, like results just stop mattering at a certain point if you do it that way. And I feel like the week to week results have to matter. How much they matter or how little they matter is why the polls change every week, because every voter thinks of them differently. Obviously, for some voters, it's not going to matter a ton. I think Notre Dame is number one. I think UVA is number one, whatever. And so I'm just going to keep them up at the top all year, because even though Army's undefeated and they've got these good wins, whatever, come on, man. If Army played Duke today, you'd pick Duke. And like, yeah, I don't know. I probably would. But like, Army's season to this point, I think, has earned them this number one spot. And that's just why I voted for Army. It's the way the kind of results have gone to shuffle the poll leading to this moment. And it's why the poll looks the way it does now, because the results matter. So that's just kind of polling talk as I dig deep into why I have Duke at four. But, you know, again, it seems like a lot of the voters kind of thought that way because Duke's at four on the final poll too. So, again, they got a date with Providence and then Richmond this weekend. So nothing really there that'll vault them up to number one for me. Although, for some people, they're just going to be at number one anyway. At number five, I have the Q's. They came in at six in the final poll. I put them five. They just beat the team that was number two. So I think that earns them, in my eyes, that earns them a spot in the top five. 14-13 win at the Crown Classic. 6 points from Joey Spolina for the Orange in this one. A great BTB goal from Michael Leo to, I guess, not really ice the game, but to really make the game an exclamation point. But yeah, you know, 6 points from Spolina, and I know what you're thinking. Maybe that's going to silence the haters. I'm going to tell you right now, it will not. They'll be back the second Spolina puts four goals up on some unranked opponent, or if he goes for, you know, 2-1 against UVA or something, they'll say he stinks. It's going to be endless. It's going to be endless for him. And to be fair, it is expected that that's what happens. It's what happens when you get, you know, I think Quint wrote about this. It's what happens when you get the 22 at Q's before you've even had a practice and you're the number one recruit in America. It's the social media age now. We're going to see your high school highlights. We're going to see all your cool plays. The spotlight is going to be mega bright. And Spolina's going to live in the spotlight like that bright for his entire college career. And when you do that, the haters will abound. The comment section will ignite every single time you play a lacrosse game, regardless of what happens. It's just how it goes. I will say, I think Spolina's been really good at handling it so far. Credit to him. Like, he doesn't seem like a guy who's rattled by the shit talk and all that. I'm sure playing a little box has helped him with that. But credit to him for handling that spotlight, I think, as well as he has to this point in his career. This week, Q's is at Delaware. It's another opportunity for the Orange to notch, I think, an important win. That'll be a ranked non-con win if they can get it. And you know, everybody wants to build that non-con resume. It's so important come tournament time. So the ACC is not going to be a cakewalk. This is a big one for Q's, like any non-con game would be. So I'm looking forward to that one too. Q's, again, I have them at five here. They came in the final poll at six. At number six, all right, here's where the madness, I guess, starts. Or here's where I guess, went insane. But at number six, I have Yale. They just beat number one. They just beat Denver. I don't know how you are. They came in at number 10 in the poll itself. I don't know how you go to Denver, you play in a sold out Peter Barton Stadium, and you beat number one without 2/3 of your starting attack and a team full of guys with the flu. You go to Denver and you do that, and people are voting you clearly less than 10, because I had Yale at six. Somebody's got to be balancing me out. But look, I have Yale at six here. I think a win over number one on the road, and your only loss is your heartbreaker to Penn State, heartbreaker that was entirely your fault, to Penn State, with a roster being held together by medical tape and ace bandages and Pedialyte for these flu guys. I mean, it's tough to say that they don't deserve to be higher than 10, right? Anyway, Yale takes on Harvard this weekend in New Haven, the rivalry game. That will be a good one. But yeah, the Bulldogs knocked off number one this week, so I have them at six. They came into the final poll at 10. Number seven, I have Denver, one spot behind the team that beat them, as I often do with this kind of thing. They came in at 8 in the final poll, so one off where I have them. The game against Yale was a ton of fun to watch. Well into the fourth quarter, I had no idea who was going to win that game. It was really, really that good of a back-and-forth contest. I think Denver must have hit 8 or 9 pipes in that game. There was an extra man where Richie Connell ripped a lefty shot, hit a post. It came back to him. He took the same shot and hit the same part of the post again. I couldn't believe what I was watching, but Pios are now the third team in a row to lose after taking the number one spot. Apparently it's cursed. I think faceoffs being one-sided against Denver was a factor in this game and not one that I saw coming. I think Rodriguez, Mac Rodriguez, and Nick Ramsey are a solid duo for Yale. I thought they would, you know, battle Stathicus, giving them kind of the 1-2 punch of two different guys. I did not think they would outright dominate the game, but that's what they did. A lot of talking and a lot of jawing in this one. If you were watching it, a lot of players coming after each other. This game had some intensity to it, and that made it fun to watch for me. Plus, come on, Eric Law was on the call. I know we all bemoan the paywalled streams and services. I find Denver's to be worth it. I know if you want to say some of the other ones are no good, okay, but I really do think if you watch a couple of games on Denver's, you can see that's a pretty good bang for your buck one that the Denver one gives you. At number 8, I have Hopkins. The final poll has them at 7. I have them at 8. So kind of flip-flopped, I believe, with Denver. But Degnan took 14 shots in this game, which, again, we're talking Garrett Degnan, a shooter like him. I mean, okay, 14 shot. But Angelus didn't take one. You got nothing from, you know, obviously you got nothing from Melendez. I think Hop is at their best when they spread the wealth, when they use all these guys that they have on offense, so many scorers. They take on Navy next week. But, you know, it was a great game that they played with Hughes at the Crown. While we're here, actually, while we're talking the Crown, let's just talk about it for a second. We all know what I'm talking about here. It became the discussion on social, but the Crown had a number of games this weekend. They had Hughes Hop, and then they had the Stony Brook versus Hopkins women. They had Tampa and Wingate in D2. They had High Point and Jacksonville in D1 men. Syracuse Hop men got the treatment it has to get. It got, you know, the ESPN broadcast and all that. But the other three games left a lot to be desired in the streaming department. I'm going to be transparent here. I'm going to level with you. I'm going to be honest. I didn't even know that this was an issue until the women's game was getting played. I was traveling basically all weekend. I was kind of checking in the games from my phone in places where I didn't have any sound or anything anyway. So I didn't notice that these earlier games, like the Tampa Wingate game, I had no idea that it had no sound, no play-by-play, no nothing. I noticed that there was no score bug, but I was like, eh, that just happens in lacrosse sometimes, whatever. So I called out the women's game specifically, that they deserve better than that, because that's when I actually got to stop for a second and watch a little bit. And it did. And I got replies saying, it's not just the women's game, it was all three of these games. Which, fair, if my post made it seem like men's versus women's coverage, then, and it's not, that wasn't the issue, then that's totally fair. I didn't want to try and go down that road. But all three of these games, getting just single camera video, nothing else, no sound, no play-by-play, no score bug, no nothing. Like, what are we doing here? Come on. I'm not naive to this. I know it is not cheap to broadcast a game. I have no idea what the financial situation is for this event, for any of that stuff. I don't know. I'm sure there's, you know, that's got to be some kind of part of the reason. But the sport, I feel like we just have to do better, because the Crown Classic is becoming a major event every year. There were thousands of people there to watch these games. Charlotte is becoming a very, very awesome lacrosse area. You got PLLs putting a team down there. They're not doing that because people don't like lacrosse in Charlotte. Of all things to lag behind maybe in the rest of the event, I feel like the broadcast is the thing that should not be the thing that lags behind. I know I'm not being constructive here. This is not being constructive at all. This is me literally just being critical and kind of a jerk about it, I guess, because I'm not giving you anything here in the way of an actual solution to make this happen. But it doesn't mean that I'm wrong. I really would like to see, I think in past years, we were at a place where there was no stream at all at the Crown. And obviously people hated that. And we got to this year where we have Q's Hop gets the stream, and then the other games, you get just the camera. I hope this event has enough positive traction to it that it's able to get to a place next year where you have something. You have somebody, just one person at least, just calling out the plays as they go on a broadcast for the games that are there. All the teams deserve it. They really do. The Tampa Wingate game was a banger. It was so good. All the games were great. You know, you just want them. As somebody who loves the sport, it's just something you want to see. And again, I'm sorry. I know I'm not being constructive because I'm not telling you how I think you should do it because I don't know. But again, because of how big the event is getting and the market it's in, you want to see the broadcast rise to the level of the success level that, you know, it seems like the ticket sales are having, that other things around the event are having. You want to see that happen. But I don't mean to go off on a tangent there. Yeah. So as I was saying, Hopkins is at 8. At 9, this is where I'm going to get the hate, maybe. At 9, I have Maryland. You've probably been wondering what's taken so long. I was between Maryland at 8 or 9, and I ended up giving a narrow edge to Hop. I think the biggest thing you're going to say to me is, how can you have Q's that high and Maryland this low when Maryland won? I feel like the way Maryland played this week just put a bad taste in my mouth. There was no Luke Weirman. Okay, so there's that for Maryland. But all of it, that's all it takes? And all of a sudden, Maryland needs OT to beat a winless Brown team? I'm not trying to you know, disrespect Brown here, but that's not pretty. I do not think this team is better than Hopkins right now, or Denver. They came in at 5 in the poll, and I just don't see them playing number 5 in the country level across, or at least I didn't this week. That might change next week. Look, I've been very loud about loving Zapatello. I think Braden Erksa is great, but I was just a little stunned that all it took was Weirman's out of the lineup for the day, and we need OT to beat Brown. I was a little surprised by that. The whole game to me was a little like, eh, didn't love it. And maybe it's wrong for me to knock Maryland down a couple of spots just for losing or winning ugly, but I don't know. As I was doing the poll, I was like, this team should be ranked here. They should be above Maryland. They played this week like they should be above Maryland. So at number 10, I have Penn State. They came in at 9 in the poll. I have them at 10 after they just dismantled Cornell, 20-9. Jeez. For the second year in a row, Penn State is making a run at the Ivy League championship, beating Yale and Cornell the last 2 weeks. They have won 5 straight. That Colgate game feels like ages ago. Nittany Lions are in a groove, man. They can score and score and score. They are at Marquette next week. They'll be a heavy favorite in that game. At 11, I have Georgetown. The 11th spot for Georgetown matches where they are in the final poll. They didn't play over the weekend, so I guess you can call that holding serve. Their last game was a win against High Point that was closer than the final score. I think I mentioned this last week on Friday, but it was not a... I know the final spread was 6 goals, but High Point had opportunities to win that game, and they were still in it well into the fourth quarter. So I think, you know, High Point hanging with Georgetown the way they did makes you wonder about who the Hoyas really are. We'll see. They get a weekend off to think about it. The Hoyas host Dartmouth this weekend. Number 12, I have Cornell. I dropped Cornell after that loss. I did not drop them as far as others. In the final poll, they came in at 15. So some of the other voters had them really plummeting. They did not play a good game there. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not trying to make excuses for them. They played ugly. They deserve to go down a ways. I think the Big Red can be happy to play shootouts sometimes. I think their offense is good enough to have, you know, to show up and just want to have a track meet. I think, but when you do that, you risk games like this one sometimes. And as fun as it is, as much as I love it, it's why I wanted to watch this game they played against Penn State this week so badly. It's fun to watch a game plan of give up 19, score 20. Like, those games can be fun, but it's tough to consistently play well and be good late into April and May that way. So we'll see how Cornell kind of adjusts things and rights the ship after that. They are at Princeton this week, so they get a good Ivy League contest to figure themselves out. Speaking of the Tigers, 13, I have Princeton. This is where they came in the final poll. They beat Rutgers this week 14-8. Tigers' losses right now are Duke and Maryland. Two good quality losses. They have wins over UNC and Rutgers. So solid. Putting together a decent little resume are the Tigers. It's basically into Ivy League play for them now. They host Cornell this weekend, as we just said. Their attack is fun. Kabiri is a star. Kabiri is going to be a star, and Mackesy has been a star. Like, it is, it's a good group that they have there on offense. Given how much they lost in the portal, it's crazy how little we've had to talk about that for Princeton. All their stars going to Syracuse and Michigan and, you know, here and there and everywhere. And all we're saying is, man, Kabiri and Mackesy are really good. So it's a credit to Coach Madelon and that staff and that leadership in that locker room, because they really don't seem like they missed a beat. Number 14, I have Penn. This matches where they are in the final poll. The Quakers are 14. They won against Villanova this weekend. Emmett Carroll remains incredible, 67% in net. I think he had 16 saves. I don't know if I'm the only one in this camp. I can't imagine I am, but I am considering him the best goalie in the country right now, the way he's playing. Penn is getting the suddenly feisty Brown, I guess, the Brown that took Maryland to OT. So Penn Brown this weekend is suddenly of interest, I guess. Maybe Brown can get off the Schneid, get a win, big Ivy win, and start disrupting conference play. Harvard at 15. I have Harvard 15. They came in at 12. So basically, I flip-flopped where the final poll had Cornell and Harvard. Are we that sure? Are we certain they're better than Princeton and Penn? Their best win is Michigan. Penn's is Duke. Princeton's is UNC or Rutgers. Harvard's undefeated. They're not to be taken lightly. I am not disrespecting Harvard here. I am a fan of Harvard. I think they are a very, very good team. This weekend's game against Yale will be a great installment in that long history. But this is just where I kind of felt right about Harvard. I think Sam King is a teamer at attack, an All-American right now in my eyes. He's doing so much for this team right now. He really is an electric player. I think he kind of steadies a team that sometimes needs somebody to rein them in a little bit. So I am a big fan of Sam King's game, but I have Harvard here at 15. 16, I dropped Michigan here to 16. They dropped all the way to 18 in the final poll. I have them a little bit higher, which is a little bit of a reversal of how it's been. Usually I have them lower than the final poll, but their best win right now is Delaware. This weekend they play Notre Dame. It's really their last chance for a big non-con win before Big Ten play, and they need it. They really need one, because like I said, their best non-con win right now is Delaware. Conference play in the Big Ten is going to be a bear. There will be no easy games. So I think Michigan has got to be looking at this one like, this is getting our best shot of the year right now. It's Notre Dame, defending champs. We need one. This is like, you know, you got to have it, Michigan. You got to put on a good show. 17, I have UNC. Carolina smashed Hofstra this week. Probably doesn't really do for them much rankings-wise, RPI-wise, any of that stuff. But the Heels came in at 16, one spot ahead of where I have them. I think that's fair. That's fine. The Penn win, I think, can do a lot for them, maybe, depending on how Penn goes the rest of the way. But they're going to need to bolster the resume a bit. The really big-time opponent left for them outside of ACC play, Army. Carolina hosts Army, I believe, at the end of March. That'll be a big one for UNC, for that non-con resume. 18, I have Rutgers. And I feel like Rutgers is barely hanging on to the 20 here for me, folks. Their best win is Loyola. They got beaten pretty solidly by Army and Princeton. They play, you know, close games with Stony Brook and Lehigh. Like, how certain are we really that Rutgers is a top 20 team? They came into the final bowl at 19. So they're just hanging on, I think, for some people here. Some people might have dropped them altogether. We'll see where they are next week. Right? Rutgers is a they're entering a territory where they're either going to be out of the mix or they're going to pick somebody off late and just wreck the whole thing come tournament time, tournament selection time. At 19, I have Richmond. Spiders at 19 matches the final poll. They dropped 3 spots from a week ago despite winning because their schedule just doesn't do a ton for them for ranking purposes. Like, beating UMBC just isn't going to turn any heads. It's not going to jump you up the polls at all. They play Bucknell today on Tuesday. Tuesdays are for the Hunter. Can Bucknell do it? We'll see. That would be a big reach. But anyway, yeah, Richmond at 19 matches the poll. And at 20, I gave the last spot to Delaware. They were also 20 in the final poll. I had them in the poll last week. The poll did not last week. UMass was, but UMass lost. So Delaware kind of slides up into their spot following the UMass loss. Delaware beat Monmouth this week. Doesn't really do much for you, but they can do a lot better than that if they can beat Cuse this weekend. It is by far the toughest game that the Hens have played yet. So I have Delaware at 20. Other teams considered, NJIT. Look, it's the same story, man. They're 7-0. I love it. I will cheer for the Highlanders every week because of just how awesome this story is. I hope they never lose. If they beat UVM this week, I'll probably rank them. But as of this moment, I think their best win is like Siena or Monmouth. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. You can call me a hater. Say I hate America. Say I hate fun. Whatever. I can't put them in the top 20. UMass was ranked last week. I had them considered last week. They lost to UVM. So they just don't have that win that puts them up in the poll for me. Playing Army close is really the best thing on their resume. They get Rutgers this week. I consider that to be a winnable game for UMass. That'll be a good one. UMass wins that, they'll be right back in the top 20, I think. They'll probably just switch and take Rutgers' spot. I considered Quinnipiac for the poll. I believe they also got votes. Bobcats are 5-0. If you get to mid-March without a loss, you deserve top 20 consideration. If NJIT is getting consideration from voters, Quinnipiac should too. They have wins over Brown and Bryant. Play Wagner this weekend. That's not going to get them into the poll. But they are looking like a threat in conference play. The Bobcats are. I think this is by far the team I was most wrong about this year. I did not think they would be good. But here they are undefeated in March. Villanova got votes. They lost to Penn this weekend in a close one. They were in it. Cats are 3-3. They needed 2 overtimes against Drexel. They really don't have a big-time win. Their big-time opponents, Yale, Penn State, Penn, all L's. Monmouth this weekend is not going to do much for them. They're running out of kind of the non-con games to make an impact, and then it'll just come down to Big East play. A team that I considered, but I don't think got any votes, Vermont. UVM just beat UMass, who was ranked last week. Like, at a minimum, they deserve some thought, right? Maybe consideration. Somebody might put them at 20. No, they beat the 20 team. They played Harvard tough. They took lumps early. There's no debate in that. They had some rough games early in the year, but they are showing some fight. I think face-off is looking better all the time for them, and that's a difference maker. Henry Dodge really getting comfortable at the D1 level. I think since having a rough time against Cuse in week one, I think he's won the face-off battle every week except against Harvard when they basically split it. It was like 15-14 or 14-15. They have Dartmouth this week. I think they still look like a threat to take the America East, so I thought about Vermont this week off the UMass win. Thought if the pollsters thought UMass should be ranked and Vermont beat them, then that must mean that Vermont should be considered to be ranked, right? But they were not in the receiving votes ranks this week. Teams that were, but I didn't really consider voting for, Colgate. They have the Penn State win. Obviously, it gets better every week since Penn State's on a heater. But all their other big-time opponents, Cuse, Yale, Villanova, they beat Colgate soundly. Loyola win, I guess, is decent. Not really. Loyola's record stinks. It's not enough to put Colgate into the top 20 for me. Lafayette win doesn't do much either. I think I'll keep watching Colgate and the Raiders to see if they can be kind of disruptive in Patriot League play. You know, they'll get into those conference games against their tough conference opponents, and it'll be exciting. But I'm waiting now to kind of see what they do there. I'm not ready to rank Colgate yet again. Bryant, I did not really consider putting Bryant in. They were idle this weekend, so it's not like they had some statement win. Their last 2 wins are Manhattan and Fairfield. UMBC is their opponent this weekend. They still feel like a fringe team to me on the outside. I wouldn't put them ahead of any of those other teams I really considered voting for right now. Towson, I didn't really consider Towson for this. They played UVA to a 4-goal loss, but a loss. They have Loyola loss, which is not good. Loyola didn't really get any votes or consideration from me, so why would I consider Towson, I guess? Look, they're a good team. I think Towson's a good team. I'm on the outside of putting them in the poll right now. If they caught fire and won the CAA, would I be shocked? Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. And last, Ohio State. I didn't really think about putting Ohio State in. They've now lost three straight. Even if they were in all three of those games, but they still lost three straight. Their best win right now, I think, is like Utah. You know, they got Detroit Mercy midweek. Not going to do a ton for them to put them in the poll or on the resume or anything, but a weekend date with Denver will. A weekend date with Denver. Ohio State feels like they're always going to be kind of looming. I'm going to try and see them in person in a couple weeks because they're going to be at Rutgers, which isn't too far from me. And I'm looking forward to that. Go try and see the Buckeyes. So they need a good win to get them back into the poll. They can't count on things happening ahead of them and them just kind of climbing as a result. They need to win the way back into the poll. And that, as they say, is that. That's the top 20 from this week. So my ballot a little bit crazy, maybe. Crazy like a fox. I think I'm 100% right. I don't care what anybody else says. But that's going to do it for today. Stay tuned to your socials and to the NLL world throughout the day for the NLL trade deadline news as it happens today, leading up to when that I believe 2 o'clock magical time passes. I think it's 2. You might want to check me on that. And then there's some great lacrosse today. Tuesdays are for the Hunter. Bucknell Vichman could be good. We'll see. So some good games today. And then on Friday, we will have the weekend preview and all the other good stuff that usually comes before a big lacrosse weekend. And if there's any more free agent news in the PLL, of course, I'll try and have that for you as best as I can too. Thank you again for coming back and for sticking around with me. We'll see you next time.
The ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.